Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks very much, Dermot. Good afternoon this Thursday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray@rte.ie. 225 million fine for Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook. They're all the one company. And we were just doing the maths on it. So 225 million. It's a sizable fine that you heard in the news there. But Mark Zuckerberg on his own, individually, is worth $135 billion. Now, forget about the exchange rate, because when you're in $135 billion and $225 million, doesn't matter that much. Anyway, $225 million is 1/600th of his personal wealth. So that's like going up to somebody who has 600 quid in the bank and saying, you've been a bold boy, give me €1. Doesn't have much effect. I'm reading An Ugly Truth at the moment, which is about Facebook. And you're probably bored listening to me talking about it. They've far too much power. They sell this notion of community, warm, cuddly, fuzzy feeling, when all they want is our information and money. And they want to be bigger and bigger and bigger. World domination. And in a way, Facebook as a company is way bigger than a lot of nations. Like the clout, the power, the resources, the money that Facebook have make Ireland look like a little tinchy little thing. So well done. I'm delighted that they've been fined 225 million. But the fines need to be bigger and the laws need to be stronger. And the sanctions need to be more strict on these companies. Because a lot of what they're doing now, or a lot of what they're being used by people to do, is not good and it's very negative. And that needs to be addressed. Anyway, that's that. What about last night? I have to admit, I watched the game because of Ronaldo. That's the way, you know. Anyway, and then you're drawn into it, aren't you? And then Gavin Bissouna, who is a star is born, the Irish goalkeeper, saved Ronaldo's penalty in the first, 15 minutes or so, after the VAR was looked at for about 10 minutes. And then John Egan scored just before half time. And we were holding on. And we've had nights like that before. We were desperately under pressure, but holding on to that lead. And then, two body blows. One just before full time. And then there was 5 minutes extra time. We held on for the 5 minutes, and it was about 5 minutes, 40 seconds or whatever. And he scores again. And heartbreak and disappointment. And look, some great things. As a country, we're brilliant at this, aren't we? Like, we lost 2-1. And as Trapattoni used to say, it's not about the show, it's about the result. And in years to come, all that will be remembered is the result. But it was a brilliant performance by the Irish team. Matt Doherty, brilliant. Shane Coleman in the main was brilliant. Gavin Bissouna, brilliant. Like, young team, loads of potential. Fingers crossed for the next two games, which are also World Cup qualifiers. So that was that. It was the birthday last night. There was cake and candles and blowing out, and for he's a jolly good fellow and all that sort of thing. And then the match, and disappointed. But along with all of that, and we're going to come to this later, I was one digit away from being scammed. And I sit here and listen to Conor Pope every week, and we've talked about scams over and over again over the last few months. And you'd think I'd be paying attention, and I thought I was. But they're so good, and I'll tell you how good they are. And it's a sort of a cautionary tale, because we'll have Conor on in about 10 minutes' time. And I was one digit away from being scammed last night, so that was a close miss, a very close miss. Which is the U2 song. The researchers at that's Sydney University, that's a different thing. Researchers at Durham University analysed Spotify playlists that were put together as lullaby playlists. So parents all over the world have put together a selection of songs to help their little babbies go to sleep. So the people in Durham University analysed this. They also looked at the qualities that a lullaby song needed. So they'd be slowish in tempo, relatively quiet dynamics, simple rhythm pattern, something that imitates a rocking movement. See, lullaby. Ah, goodbye, baby. Simple melody that's easier to memorise and easier to sing, predictably achieved by repetitive phrases and verses, and a high pitch due to the connotations that mothers, females, usually sing lullabies. And they came up with the best lullaby song. Yes. So if you're having trouble putting the little one to sleep, Bono's your man.
Or do you feel the same? Will it make it easier?
Thanks, Bono. I wonder would he be able to silence this? Yeah, that sounds like a baby in distress, doesn't it? It ain't. That's Echo, who's a 7-year-old lyra bird. Have you heard of these? You have, yeah. They're the greatest mimics in the world, lyra birds are. L-Y-R-E-B-I-R-D-S. And Echo, who's in Tarango Zoo in Sydney, has been captured mimicking a crying baby, complete with ear-splitting, tonsil-rattling screams. And you've heard it before. They mimic car alarms, they mimic phones ringing, they mimic all sorts of things. Anyway, that's Echo there, 7-year-old lyrebird in Sydney, mimicking a child. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Friday evenings on the Den. Oh, we used to look forward to that. 5:30. It meant that the weekend was here, and it was one of those programs that was cross generational. Because everybody, you know, granny could watch it and the parents could watch it. And it was just one of those feel-good things. And of course, it was the launch pad for Will Smith as a global superstar actor-type person. Well, they're doing a reboot of it. Jaberye Banks was announced as the person who's going to play the Fresh Prince in the reboot of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I'm a bit disappointed, I have to say, because I thought if ever it came back, that I'd be the person, you know. And I've been practicing the rap for the opening. You know that everybody knows that. They do it as their party piece. I've been practicing away. And I should have sent it to Will Smith, because he's one of the executive producers. I should have sent it to him. And then he would have considered me, you know. I'll just put it in an email. Count myself in. 1, 2, 3. Now this is a story all about how I like a flip turned upside down. I like to take a minute, just sit right there, and I'll tell you how I became the Prince of Kildare. In West Philadelphia, born and raised, on the playground was where I spent most of my days. Chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool. I was shooting some b-ball outside of the school when a couple of guys who were up to no good started making trouble in my neighborhood. I got into a little fight and my mom got scared. She said, "You're moving with your auntie and uncle to Kildare." I whistled for a cab when it came quite near. The license plate said "Fresh" and it had a dice in the mirror. If anything I can say, this cab is rare, but I thought, nah, forget it. You're home to Bel-Air. I pulled up to the house about 7 or 8, and then I yelled to the cabbie, "You're home, smell you later." I looked at my kingdom, I was finally there, sitting my throne in the town of Kildare. Oh, yeah. Ah, that's embarrassing. It was Niamh Hassell's. Well, she hassled me into doing that. She just wouldn't be happy until I did it. So there it is. Anyway, we'll send it off to Will Smith, see what he thinks. Or maybe we won't. Well done to Ireland for a great game last night. And Stephen Kenny is setting the groundwork for a future awesome international soccer team. Ole, ole, ole. That's a great part of the Irish personality, is that we can pluck positives out of defeat. We're good at that. Well, I suppose we've had to be over the years, or else we'd be very upset if weren't able to do that. Now, our quiz of today. Let's see what we're up to today. Today is the 2nd of September, and we've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. We're looking for two people to come on and answer 5 questions each. And there's a prize. It's a 2-night stay in the Fairways Hotel Dundalk. It's a 4-star destination, the heart of Dundalk. You've dinner on one evening in the Bistro restaurant. Loads of things to do up there. Enjoy a calming cruise across the Loch of Legends with Carlingford Loch Ferries, or visit Ravensdale Equestrian Centre, located close to the award-winning Ravensdale Forest. Or you can take a stroll, or even a stroll around the historic fishing village of Black Rock, and finish off the day, of course, with a warm welcome back at the Fairways Hotel. You can find out more at inua.ie, inua.ie. So 2 people after 4 o'clock, you might win that prize, but you'll definitely win a Ray Darcy Show mug. And here's the qualifying question for today. In which Irish county would you find the town of Killarney? In which Irish county would you find the town of Killarney? 1850 715 900. 1850 715 900. There you go. Now, we read out an email yesterday about knits, and we got a huge reaction to that. And as I said yesterday, coincidentally, there was an article by Mary McCarthy in The Independent yesterday about knits and about adults getting knits. So we decided to get Mary McCarthy into studio today, and we have a knit buster. Who are you going to call? Knit busters. And we'll find out why they seem to be more prevalent now than they were back in the day. Because I have a memory of once or twice a year, all of us lining up in front of the sink, and my mum doing the thing with the little comb, and then she'd use the back, her thumbnail, and there'd be a little click there where she'd kill the little feckers. But it seems that they're around all the time now, and we'll find out why. Anyway, that's coming up. Baxter Jury is Ian Jury's son, and he's written a memoir about his childhood with Ian Jury as his dad. And we're going to talk to him. And Norma Sheen is on after 4 o'clock, and the quiz is in there as well. And we're looking for you to get involved. 5155 on ray@rte.ie. You'll have to sing it again when the den comes back. I don't think so. Good afternoon. Great. Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick, which was number one back in 1979 for Ian Jury and the Blockheads. And we'll be speaking to Baxter Jury later on about his childhood memoir. 5155 on ray@rte.ie. Got text at 4 o'clock in the morning telling me to collect parcel and tracking. I ignored it. Can you ask Connor about that? Seems there's loads of those, so we will ask Connor about that. And when we were young, my big sister used to rinse our hair with vinegar at the end of the wash. We never got them. My big sister's having an up today, thinking of you, Pauline. Hope everything goes well. And when our son was a young lad, he used to sing that song, Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick, but he used to sing Hit Me With Your Lipstick. Says Aina, how are you doing, Aina? Now, there's big talk about the announcement of the government's housing plan, Housing for All. $4 billion a year until 2030. There's a great piece, opinion piece, in the Times today, which is worth a read, by Hugh Brennan. We had Hugh Brennan in a few months ago, and he is the CEO of Ocoolon, Co-Housing Alliance, CLG, and they build affordable houses. And one of the points he makes is about making houses permanently affordable, because there was the big news about the house that was originally a sort of a council house or social housing or affordable housing, and then it was sold on at a huge profit. And that is a problem, because if you provide affordable social housing, then when they, in 10 years' time, they can be sold on. So what he suggests in this piece is that things should be permanently affordable, so that when people buy them initially, there is some sort of contract that doesn't allow them to sell them on into the free market, so to speak, for a large profit at the end. So it's a long-term view of our housing crisis to make sure that future generations don't end up in the situation that we're in now. So it's worth a read. Hugh Brennan, CEO of Ocoolon. 5 on 5 5 on ray@rte.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 5 on 5 have on or Ray at RTE.ie. Now, once again, we're talking about scams and text messages and bogus phone calls and the like. And Connor Pope is on the line. How are you doing, Connor?
Hi, Ray. How are you getting on?
Good. Now, will I start at the very beginning? It's a very good place to start.
Do.
Right,
do.
Okay.
And would you like to do it in a rap form, Ray?
Oh God, that was Niamh's fault. You know Niamh. She's very persuasive.
She's very persuasive.
Very
persuasive. All right.
Yes, okay. So, just about 5 o'clock yesterday, the phone, and it was a number that I didn't recognise, and I was ringing away there, didn't answer it. Then at 17:37 exactly, I got a text.
Yep.
And it says, bank here, you know, I won't name it. We will send you a text shortly with details of an unusual transaction that was made using your credit card. Please reply to the text message as directed to help us keep you account safe and secure. The number you will receive the text from is, and it gives the number. Okay, so that was at 17:37. Then at 17:38, at that text number, I got it. Your bank here again. Do you recognise a transaction on your credit card ending blah, blah, blah at the name of a website for 00 euro? If you recognise the transaction, please reply by texting yes. If not, please reply by texting no. For security reasons, we have restricted the use of your card until we hear from you. So I text no, that I didn't recognise that transaction.
Yeah.
So then they say, thank you for your reply. As soon as a fraud advisor is available, we'll phone you to discuss the transaction, so please be ready for the call. Okay? So nothing happened then. And then later on, after the match, after we lost, or thereabouts, I picked up my phone. So this arrived in at 9:10 last night, but I didn't see it until whatever, 9:30, 9:45. And it says, suspicious transaction was made on your account. Not you, please review. And it has a link. Now, I clicked into that link like an idiot, despite what you've told me again and again and again. I put in my user ID and then it asked for my PIN. I was about to put it in when I noticed, do you know the way you get 6 things and it says put in the first, the third and the fifth?
I do.
Yeah. So there were 5 blanks on one line and then one box underneath. I'd never seen that before, although everything else looked exactly like what I would expect from my bank's app.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, that's odd. I've never seen that before. So I didn't, luckily, put in my PIN. I was one digit away from finishing it off and I didn't put it in. So that was that. And then again later on yesterday evening, it says, confirm your spend of €750 on Revolut with your card and there's a number. Please reply Y or N. Now, at that stage, I was getting freaked. So I made the call to my bank, held on for about 30 minutes to get somebody, finally got a guy. He went through everything, and initially he thought that all of them are bogus, right? And then he got back to me, and he rang me back at about 10:15, probably 10:45, and he said, no, actually, the first one was from us. That's the one about your...
0000.
Exactly. Yes. The transaction with the name of the website and that was from them. He said, but the other ones weren't. Now here's the thing, and I know you've told me over and over again and our listeners that the people who are involved in this fraud and scamming are becoming increasingly sophisticated. So I'm asking you this question, a number of questions actually, but the first one is this. So the first one was, did they, I wonder, prompt the bank to get in touch with me? So did it start before I got the initial text by somebody going, okay, we'll try and use this number, this card, and then the bank will contact them, and then we will have him in a sort of a mind frame, in a frame of mind that he'll be receptive to texts? Is that how it works, or is it a coincidence? Or
no, I can understand why you might think that, and like that, you know, to be honest, when I first heard the story, I was thinking that's a very strange series of events, and they all must be linked because it seems like a very strange coincidence.
Yes,
that you'd get a message, a legitimate message from your bank, and then 5 hours later you'd get a bogus message from somebody pretending to be your bank, and of course because of the way your phone is set up, they'd all end up in the same thread of messages, so they'd all be linked. So, and I was thinking it seems too odd, too much of a coincidence to be an actual coincidence. But what I did, and as soon as I heard your story, I contacted your bank with your permission.
Yes.
And I said to them, listen, this has happened. Is there any way that the bogus message that you received at 10 o'clock is connected to the legitimate message you received at 5:27? And I was told literally 5 minutes before we went on air that it was a coincidence.
A coincidence.
Right. What happens is these scam artists, they send out hundreds of thousands of these kinds of messages every single day to every, like, just they just bombard phones with them, and every now and then they're going to get lucky, and every now and then they're going to send a message to somebody who has already received a message from their bank. And it doesn't matter what bank it could be. It could be PTSB, Bank of Ireland, AIB, Ulster Bank, whatever. So they were adamant that it was just a coincidence, and you kind of have to take them on face value on that. Because if it wasn't a coincidence, it would have meant that A, the criminals had access to your credit card,
yes,
so they knew, yes, to make a bogus transaction.
Yes.
And B, that they were so sophisticated that they would be able to time their fraudulent transaction and the communication with your bank and their subsequent communication at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock last night, and to have it all in sync. So they would really, like, they would have had to have been, it would have to have been a really sophisticated scam operation. So it's probably more believable that they just flood a network with these messages.
Right.
Every now and then they get lucky and they get someone who is in that frame of mind. What I will say to you is, you were literally one keystroke away from having your bank account drained. And I don't want to alarm you, but that's what would have happened. Because once you'd given them access to your bank account, they would have had overnight free rein on your bank account.
Yeah.
And they could have done all sorts of things to it, and you would have had very little by way of comeback. And then if you'd gone to your bank tomorrow morning and said, "Oh, lads, listen, my account is now empty," they would have said, "Well, did you input your details into a bogus website?" And you would have had to say, "Yes, I did." So you have very little by way of comeback or redress in that scenario. So you were incredibly lucky.
Wow.
And you were incredibly unlucky, because the very fact that you would have got a message from your bank, and then 5 hours later you get a message from a scam artist. Now, and I'm basing this on what the bank says to us, so we have,
yeah,
to take it at face value. So if they say it's a coincidence and their systems haven't been breached, well then, you know, unless we can prove otherwise, we have to say that. But the bottom line is, and the first message and the second message are very different, right? Now, the first message says, it's not asking you for anything. It's just saying, can you confirm if this transaction happened?
Yes. Yeah.
Right? Yes or no?
I say no.
It's not looking for you for your, any of your details. It's
no.
not looking for your passwords.
Yeah.
It's not looking for you to or not looking at for you to follow a link. It's just asking you this question. So, but the second message, the one at 10 o'clock at night, is asking you to do something.
Yeah.
And that's the only real safeguard that we have against these scam artists, is if you are asked for a password, if you're asked to follow a link, if you're asked to do any of those kinds of things, to input your PIN number, anything like that, it's bogus.
Right.
And that's 100% true. There's no bank in the world that is going to ask you to follow a link in a text message to their site. Now, the other protection,
which you can understand, because I don't, like, you know, I do listen to you, Conor. So,
listen, I totally understand.
But you can understand the sequence of events that happened to me yesterday evening, that you know, despite everything you'd said, I had been told about a suspicious transaction, and then a text about a suspicious transaction,
yeah,
appears, and it tells me to click into this thing. And when I click into it, everything looks fine.
Absolutely.
Until I get to that where, you know...
And as it happens, we both have the same bank. So I know exactly what the page,
yes,
that you were,
yes,
you're talking about looked like. And I know exactly what the six boxes look like.
Yes.
And this is the thing, and like, I would say this to any of your listeners as well, there's absolutely no blame apportioned to you in this scenario, even though you're quite savvy on these things.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
I think most people would have been hoodwinked given the chain of unfortunate events that,
yeah,
unfolded,
yeah,
here. Because, you know, it would have been plausible to think, okay, well, now they've communicated with me before, and now they're communicating with me again.
Okay.
But the bottom line is, and the thing to always, always, always remember,
don't
is
click on
never,
the link.
Ever click on the link.
Don't because, click on
and
the
then
link.
The, like, and the other
link,
thing,
yeah,
that you can do is, if you click on the link, right, and if you look up in the address bar, you know where you typically type in www.bankbank.com,
yeah,
or whatever, you know, that would have been the giveaway that it wasn't a legitimate bank site, because the web address at the top would have been bogus.
Ah, yes, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, so, but you were incredibly lucky that the sixth box
was down
a line
below.
Yes. Because the thing is, that's all you needed. That was the only trigger you needed to make you go, hang on a second.
Yeah.
So,
you just asked them there. They're obviously listening to us, and they cut him off when he was about to say something important. So there, don't click on the link. Don't click on the link. And there are some questions coming in about DHL. We'll try and get Conor back up to answer those very quickly. If not now, before the end of the before the end of the programme, but we'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now we have Connor back on the line. Connor, somebody says here, sounds too much for coincidence. We are led to believe if spyware has been installed on your computer phone that they can actually see what is happening on your phone and may have seen the bank message. Otherwise, they may have seen the bank sending you the message. Regards, Damien.
You know, there's certainly, I'm not going to say that's not true.
Yeah. But the statement from the bank was that it's a coincidence. Okay.
That was the word they used. They said this is a coincidence.
Okay.
Now, if your phone was in some way infiltrated by somebody, that's a much more serious issue because that's somebody targeting your phone specifically to try and access your data. So, it's certainly, someone who might be concerned about certain things might want to check that out. But as I say, all we can go on right now is what the bank
okay,
is saying.
Fine,
is there's no link between the two things.
If anything about Ray's story is really important, is it can happen to anyone. How many times has Connor been on the show talking about scamming? That's the evening, last night. And you've been the subject of an attempted scam with DHL, and there's loads of texts coming in about DHL. I've had a deluge of messages supposedly from DHL since Monday, 8 messages all from different numbers. I ignore all, says Don.
Yeah, actually, in the last 48 hours, I've had about 6 text messages saying, your delivery is on the way, track your delivery here, follow this link. And to be honest, the first one I got, I was like, who knows what this is? And I nearly clicked the link. And then I was like, hang on a second, I haven't got any deliveries pending. Yeah. And it's also 10 o'clock on a Sunday night. So why would they be sending me a message at 10 o'clock? And then the next, at 4 o'clock in the morning, I got one. But I know that an awful lot of people who've got in touch with me in recent days have been getting exactly the same messages. But again, the criminals are not, they're not masterminds. So the only thing that they have, the only weapon in their armory is, will you follow the link?
Yes. So don't follow the link.
If you don't follow the link ever.
Okay. I should say it every day at the beginning of the program. Good afternoon. Welcome along to the show. And remember, don't follow the link. Okay.
Yeah, Joe Duffy.
Yeah, wash your hands
for ages during the COVID thing. Right. He's like, don't follow the link.
Don't follow the link. Thanks, Connor. Talk to you soon.
Thanks,
Be careful out there. See you. Bye. Yesterday we read out an email from one of our listeners about NITS, and coincidentally there was an article by Mary McCarthy in The Independent. So we invited, we had a huge reaction to that, so we invited Mary into studio. Good afternoon, Mary McCarthy.
Hi Ray, how are you?
Good. And we have a NIT buster as well, Andrew Hennessy.
How are you, Ray?
You can come into the microphone and take the headphones off, which is great. Mary, so you are a mother of many children?
I've got 4 kids, right.
And what ages are they?
12, 10, 8 and 5.
Right. Perfect NIT fodder.
Do you know what? I have 3 boys and 1 girl, so it could be worse.
Yes.
It could be worse.
We'll get on to the boys versus girls thing in a moment. But first, you, and this is a thing that I thought, brave isn't the word, but it was sort of brave-ish to write about it, because it wasn't the kids who were the source of the lice, but it was you.
I was the super spreader.
Yeah.
This is why I could not get rid of them. And, I think, Ray, there might be a kind of problem there with parents having it and not admitting it to themselves. There's also an issue with highlights. The shampoos kind of strip the colour out of highlights. So you'd be reluctant to, if you've shelled out a fortune on highlights, you'd be reluctant to get the shampoos. So there's a case of, there is an element of, what I don't know won't, maybe just not to check too much. And also there's a shame thing. There is.
Yes.
And I thought I got head lice 3 times last year, and I thought I have to write about this because if I'm getting them 3 times, other parents are, And I don't really care what people think, clearly, because I wrote about this. But I do think that it is something that is really annoying, and there's a shame there that really shouldn't be there. But also another...
I wonder, where does that shame come from? Because I remember, I'm from a working class background. There was 9 of us. And I thought when we were kids, it was something that working class families got that the rich kids didn't get. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Of course, that's not the case at all. But I do remember, and we'll probably come to Andrew on this, I do remember that it was maybe once a year, maybe twice a year at the most back then. This was in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah. Back then, maybe.
But it seems to be a lot more prevalent now.
No, it's all year round.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, it's talked to Mary before about it. The effectiveness of the products in the past were, you know, much higher because they used heavy chemicals and pesticides and really nasty products. And those products were classified as harmful to humans by the World Health Organization and deleted.
So I see.
The new products, new formulas are in the small print, heavily dependent on the person applying them or using them to do the hard work, which is combing.
Uh-huh.
So they have an effectiveness, but it's a lot less.
So back in the day, we were nuking them.
Absolutely.
Right. Do you remember getting them as a child, Mary?
You know, my mom, there was five of us in our family, and she said she'd comb our hair, but we didn't get them as much, and she never got them. Like, she was horrified when I was like, look, I've got these head lice. Like, she took a step back, you know.
Did she, yeah?
But she said she's never gotten them. So I don't know. I don't have the research on it. As Andrew was saying to me earlier, there is very little research in this area. Like, it's not exactly an area that you
But
want.
Anecdotally?
Anecdotally,
Have any of your friends admitted to you since you wrote the article that they too have lice?
Ray,
You
have
to
qualify that. I had three messages yesterday from women, no men, and they said, you know, I had lice and I felt there is a shame. Do you know what? I think the shame, when you were saying earlier where that shame comes from, I think it comes from you feel like you're a bad mammy, like you're not looking after your kids, you're not
like dirty. Like
dirty, that, you know. And like the creche rang me and said, oh, we found a few eggs in your son's hair. And I was mortified. And I was like, oh, and they were like, can you come and get them? And that kind of added to the sense of shame, you know, that he has to be quarantined away. So I went down, picked him up, was like doing the fierce combing, did the shampoo, which I think they're a bit of a swizz, but we can go back to that. And then I brought him back and he was grand. They checked his hair and said he was fine. And then a week later, rang me again. And this time I just felt, and they're nicest people, but you do feel that shame. It's like, she couldn't be bothered to comb his hair, you know.
So there are three stages in the life cycle of a head louse.
Yeah, well, there's several, I suppose. The important ones are, when the egg is initially laid, it's a sac of fluid, a bubble.
Right.
And that bubble has to form the shell. So the human eye cannot see this translucent sac for a few days. So then the second stage, it goes through then three molts or growing phases. And then it gets up to day 16, which is, let's say, the first phase of adult. So there's the laying of the egg, the molting, and then it's an adult phase then.
So the middle bit is, it looks like a bit of dandruff.
Yeah, basically, yes, it can do. They vary in colour for various reasons and so on.
Okay.
But what catches people out is they find a louse or they check because somebody else found a louse or whatever, and they go through little Johnny Mary's hair and they take out what they can and they go, that's grand, job done, I've lashed in the lotion, off we go.
Okay.
But no, the eggs that haven't come through yet and they haven't followed the small print, and they go back.
So your comb won't get them?
If you can't take out what you can see. So you have to let them mature through.
Right.
And that's the problem. So understanding the life cycle is the key to the success. So products, processes, or anything that says you can do it in one go, really you can't. You have to do it in at least in a follow-up check, if nothing else.
Okay. So there's no substitute for putting in the time, as in combing and combing again and combing again.
You can do as you like, look on the internet all you like. You'll find so many different ways of get amazing solutions, products and gimmicks, but eventually it boils back to the comb. Everything comes back to the comb.
And that's what you do in your clinics.
Yeah, we're experts at extracting. We're not experts on head lice. We know a lot about them, but we're experts on extracting. And and we focus purely on the life cycle.
So what you do to get rid of the little pre-egg stage
is
that you dehydrate them.
No, we don't dehydrate anymore because that particular product, whereas it has an effectiveness, it's not 100%.
Okay, so what do you do?
So we literally focus on taking them out. So in first phase, when the child or adult, for that fact, comes into us, the hair is parted off into sections and the girls will go through, detangle and so on. And then they will use the lice extractor, which is the device
we have. Which is a hoover.
Which is basically an attachment for a hoover, yeah. Right. It has a comb on one end and a filter on the other.
Right.
And it goes through section by section and they will take out the crawlers, we call them, okay? And the crawlers right down to the nymphs.
Lovely, which, isn't it, Mary?
Yeah. I tell you, my head, I just feel
I
so
I said,
there
are people scratching at home?
The nymphs, which are the small babies, they're very, very, very small. They're just after hatching and they're hard to see. And generally, when somebody's combing at home, they'll be putting in a product or a lotion of some, either homemade or commercial. And they will mask that. So they may even get to that stage and go, I found nothing. Right. But it's in the solution. So there's loads of issues with that. Then we will go through a forensic combing, section by section. And then the girls will finish with a nitpick of the eggs, the stubborn eggs that were still in the follicles.
Now, all of that, bar your super duper Hoover, you could do at home.
Everything we do, you can do at home.
So people are basically paying you to do something that they couldn't be arsed to do themselves.
If you want to put it like that,
Because it's a messy business.
Or they've tried. Well, it's a stressful business.
It's a messy business as well, isn't it?
It's time, like, very time consuming. It's time consuming. Yeah. So if you have the time to put in, and there was research done in 2008 by a nurse in the Mary Casey, she's in the UCD School of Nursing, and she did research on this that showed that combing alone, 88% of parents got rid of head lice.
Okay.
So it does, the combing does work. And I feel sorry for parents who don't have the money. Like, it's expensive. The bottle is about 15 euro. And you're told, you know, to not to get one bottle for four kids, which, you know, I used to do sometimes. So if you've got, you know, two kids, you get one bottle, and you may have to get another bottle if you've got another kid then, you know. Yes. So if people don't have the money, you can budget bug bust and just do the combing yourself. But it does take, you know, it's combing for four nights, like serious forensic combing for four nights. And then once a week after that.
And it creates tension between, you know, parent and children. And
I mean, you could play music, you can make it kind of fun. I mean, I say that, but it's never fun.
No.
You know, my husband's brilliant at it. He gets a grim satisfaction. Like, he just
does he?
It. So I'm like, you know, I'm kind of like taking advantage of that. But
okay. A couple of things. Adults, so we know now that adults can get them.
Oh, we get them every day in the clinic.
Okay. Yeah. And it's, women are more likely to get them than men. Why is that?
So testosterone is what you're pointing at. And it's not their kryptonite, but it's definitely, they don't like it. So when they come into a male host, they tend to walk away quite quickly, you know. They don't jump.
Or a bald host.
Or a bald, yeah. Yeah, the follicly challenge. We still, but they do live in a couple of millimetres, so they can go. But like we're over the nearly 8 years now, we've done over 100,000 clients. And I'd say, I haven't checked it in a while, but probably about 100 men. And they're usually Michael Bolton style hair.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
It's not, there's a reason.
Okay. And what about, because we run out of time here, but what about once you spot them and you're doing the combing, the environment, you know, the bed clothes, the pillow, all that sort of thing. What do you need to do with that?
That's quite little, isn't it, Andrew?
Yeah. Just put it into the normal wash.
Okay.
Yeah,
unless you're mega efficient. People go on about that, but I think that's
there's
actually...
There's no need. Yeah.
They're not happy off the head. You know,
right, that's where they live.
Yeah, so now they do live for a certain period of time off it, but by the time you do go through the routine, wash the bedclothes and put them back out, they're gone. Okay.
What's the name of your website?
Theheadliceexperts.com.
Theheadliceexperts.com.
Yeah, lovely, lovely, wonderful.
I suppose the message is that it happens to everybody.
Everybody. It could happen to you.
I don't have enough hair. I don't have enough hair. Mary McCarthy, thanks so much. And you can read that, Mary's article. There's more information in that article. It was in yesterday's Independent. It's on independent.ie now. And Andrew Hennessy, Head Lice Experts, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Baxter Jury. Good afternoon.
How do you do?
Good. We were just debating whether it's chaise long or chaise longe.
I always get it wrong. I think they actually the publisher respelt it to make it look French.
Right, okay. I've been telling people that you are Ian Jury's son, and chaise longue or sage longe or whatever it is your childhood memoir. Is that how you describe it?
It's a compilation of tales, I guess. More, it's not really memoirish. It's not. It's an observation of a certain time.
Okay, there's a picture of you on the cover, with a Harrington jacket, and underneath you have a Shaken Stevens T-shirt. Now, I don't know how anybody involved in you allowed you to wear a Shaken Stevens T-shirt. You were Ian Jury's son.
Yeah, I think that was the point. It was a bit of independence I was trying to grab from the kind of concrete, cool figures around me. I'd found my own person I liked. I don't know if that was very appreciated. But
So being Ian Jury's son, you're 50 this year.
Am I?
Are you? Are you? Yeah. Yes, yeah. You are, yeah. So you threw me there. Yes. So that's how you want to play it. Okay, here we go. Yeah. When, because like I was just, we played Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick to start the show today. You were 7 or 8 at that stage. When did you realise that your dad was sort of a rock and roll superstar, punk, whatever you want, way you want to describe it?
Well, I'm not sure. I think some of the book that I wrote about, it's not written about him, but it's writing about you don't at the time know the difference between your life. You only can look at it in hindsight how potentially strange it was.
Mm.
I don't know if I really, obviously I knew he was quite famous, but I didn't know how to compare that with other people's. I always thought everyone else's lives were mundanely weird.
Right, because it was your normal, I suppose. But your normal reads like it's all over the place. It was a messy childhood. Like, just talk to us about the Sulfate Strangler, for example.
Well, he was just a colourful personality and one of Dad's, you know, my Dad had a stable of these people that kind of looked up to him because he was a very strong, focused person amongst a kind of bunch of crazy people. And someone like Strangler relied on Dad for a bit of leadership. And when I was a bit wayward, Dad sort of offset the two of us to try and help each other. One, to gain a bit of parental kind of warmth and for me to sort of maybe see what the crazy edge looked like. And so I hopefully didn't launch myself over it, if you know what I mean.
So he was 6'7", and where did he get his name from?
Apparently, he had a tendency, he had huge, huge, huge arms, and that was his immediate reflex, was to stick them out and start putting them around someone's neck. I don't know how effective that was. It was more gesticulation. I think it was more an act.
And sulfate was his drug of choice at one stage, or what is?
Continually, yeah.
Continually, right. What did he drive? What car did he drive?
Well, he had an assortment. By the time I'd really met him or got to know him when he lived at our house, Dad bought him a tiny little white, very unglamorous Nissan. A Nissan Micra.
Right, and he's 6'7".
Small.
Right,
okay. He was 6'7", and his elbows used to come out either side of the windows.
Because I'm trying to imagine him dropping you off to school.
Yeah, well, it was quite, I mean, and by this stage, I'd gone to quite a highfalutin school as well, so they were quite shocked by this, the whole, the kind of circus, the devil circus that would turn up with me, an unwashed, spotty teenager being driven by him.
So you had an older sister, Jemima, and your mum and your dad separated. What age were you at that stage?
I think they probably separated, and you know, but when I was unaware, so I must have been 2 or 3, really.
Ah, right. Okay.
I was never aware of them together.
Yeah, and how much of your dad did you see?
Well, in the early stages, the less memorable stages, I don't really remember him a lot, except for gigs and the sort of him becoming progressively famous. And then towards the end, towards my latter teen, more chaotic years, I saw him a lot because he was the only one that could really handle me. So we sort of lived together,
right,
in a way.
Chaotic teenage years, right. So let's deal with that then. When was the first time you had an alcoholic drink? What age were you?
Well, I don't know if it is. I think it was the 70s, a bit like I just was listening to you talking about Nits, and I was wondering if Nits were just much bigger in the 70s, and probably everyone drunk a lot more, so they were more rampageous or something. But they, I think people just drunk, didn't they? Probably I was about 11 or 12.
Right.
Mum was perfectly normal, relatively normal household, so she didn't encourage anything like that.
Yeah.
It wasn't like any more wayward than anyone else's house.
But your dad sort of became an escape for you. And unlike other people who mitch off or do play truant or whatever way you want to call it, you had somewhere to go.
Yeah, he was just counterintuitive about not trying to close everything down. So if you close everything down and make everything a sort of judicial penalty, he sort of had an alternative approach, which was sometimes kind of dangerous, I guess, but was also very effective. So he tried to inspire you in a different way. So he just took the pressure about school away. And that was quite clever because I think he could sense I was never going to go.
Yeah.
So he just accelerated something and got to what my problem was.
The chaise longue in the title refers to a bed of sorts or a sofa of sorts in the front room where you used to go to sleep of an evening or a night or a morning. And you describe a number of times in the book how your dad became progressively more awkward, obstreperous,
yeah,
cantankerous, testing, yeah, all those things. So that was how the drink affected him, was it?
Yeah, I mean, I think he just had a lot of resentment in him anyway from all of his kind of odd and hard childhood experiences.
Mm.
So alcohol was an excuse to sort of release some of that. And I think it was always there. And I guess in the modern interpretation of alcoholism, that's what it was. But it was something, you know, he'd had a horrible childhood. And so he tried to test everybody's trust around him, I think, by pushing them. It's just quite childlike. It's like someone that hasn't grown up.
Yeah, but you could sort of understand, I suppose, you were too young to understand it, but he contracted polio at the age of 7. So he was fighting against that disability. And he struck me as a man, and I suppose this is, you can only say on reflection rather than knowing at the time, but he wanted to give a two fingers to the world, did he?
He kind of had a, but I think by the time he'd proven to himself that he wasn't what everyone expected, he just wanted to do what he wanted at any given time when everyone was least expecting it.
Right, give us an example.
Well, it depends on what type. I mean, an example, I mean, someone told me the other day, quite absolutely fascinatingly, that my doctor, who was his doctor, who had been our doctor, family doctor, I guess, for years and years, said that Dad actually won one of the first medals in the Paralympics before it was the Paralympics. Wow. in the 50s in Stoke Mandeville Hospital for swimming. And I don't think it was recognised or there's much documentation, but he knew about it because he works for the organisation.
Yes.
And I just thought, that's very Dad to do something like that, win a gold. But I don't think it was ever called the Paralympics then, but to win something like that and never even talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, that's his amazing side.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so, you know, smashing a few things and upsetting a few policemen or whatever, I always get the feeling that most people almost quite enjoyed getting upset by him.
Mm. you know, the way they say that's, you know, the sense of smell is the one that's most evocative. It brings back the strongest memories. And there's a passage in the book there about the smell of, let's see if I get it right now, Jack Daniels, PVC, cheap perfume, and there might be other things as well. So go on.
What are you going to ask me?
No, why those smells? And where do those smells bring you back to?
Well, they're the sort of odorousness of people that live by the night, I think. At a young age, I sensed that. I think it was the first signal of me detecting something I found uncomfortable or ugly. So I thought, you know, that sense of uncleansiness, I went, oh, that's not very nice or unpleasant. I don't want to be like that. It's the first indication that it wasn't natural to me to be, live in such an abandoned way.
And how has it panned out for you?
I mean, I've done all right, actually. Yeah, I've sort of merged all of these aspects quite calmly. I live in quite a calm household. Yeah,
you've a career as a singer. I listen to a number of the songs, like Cocaine Man, I like that. And there's definitely echoes of your dad in your vocal delivery.
Well, there's, you know, I'm not trying to disguise any heritage in that sense, any DNA. That's us. But I'm also attempting not to. You can't emulate.
No.
You can only emulate a little bit and then it perishes. So you have to be yourself.
Yeah. Do people constantly come up to you and tell you how much they loved your dad's music?
Sometimes. I mean, especially if you've just written a book that features your dad, then they're going to talk about it. Yeah. I try and set my musical career away from that. And when I wrote this, I knew I was reinviting that topic.
Yes.
And I don't mind, actually. I don't mind it in context of the book. I'm less interested in it when I'm doing my own music.
Of course.
You mustn't be prickly, because prickly's silly, because it's my heritage.
Yes. Well, will you share a bit of your heritage with us, or I'll share it with the people then? So just a couple of clips then.
Sex and drugs and rock and roll is all my brain and body need.
And this one, people will know Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick and Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, but you sung this at your dad's wake.
My grand wore three-piece whistles. He was never home for long. Drove a bus for London Transport. He knew where he belonged.
I'm just wondering, before I let you go, I really enjoyed the book, Baxter. Really enjoyed it. Because people describe your dad as a punk, but like, there's so much funk in there. There's nearly echoes of Lonnie Donegan, because where he was from in the world and all that. How do you best, is he uncategorizable?
I don't, you know what, since I've written the book, he's just my dad, so I don't know about that. I think it's open to everyone's, you know,
interpretation.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't mind what they call it.
Okay.
It's just, yeah, whatever.
It's good. Okay. Baxter Jury, singer, songwriter, and now author. Shay's Long, the pink cover with a picture of a young Baxter with his Shakin' Stevens t-shirts on the cover. Enjoyed that chat. Thanks, Baxter. Mind yourself.
Thank you very much. Bye bye.
Bye. And Ish Tosh and now the Prief Skelton and Oakdale, Eileen Nicknella. Grandma, good Eileen. Thank you very much. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Ian Jury, you have to go back and check out his back catalogue. You'll be surprised. Really talented singer songwriter. All there on Spotify if you have it.
Good evening. I'm from Essex, in case you couldn't tell. My given name is Dicky. I come from Billericay, and I'm doing very well.
For some reason, we used to play that in the local jukebox. Billericay Dicky. It was on the B-side of one of his hits. Now, it's time for our quiz of today. Today, 2nd of September, and the prize, a two-night stay in the Fairways Hotel Dundalk. Four-star destination, loads of things to do up there around Carlingford Loch and Ravensdale Forest, Blackrock Village. You can find out more at inewa.ie, inewa.ie, for details of the Fairways Hotel in Dundalk. Tony Moore, how are you doing, Tony?
Oh, hi, Ray. How are things?
Now, what's going to happen here if you win? You're going to go from Drogheda to Dundalk.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Nothing a Drogheda person likes more than to get a trip up to Dundalk.
You're in the middle of cooking the dinner.
That's right.
What's on the menu?
Oh, there's a lovely curry now on the menu. A Madras curry here today.
Right, okay.
My good wife has cooked it up.
Oh, I thought you'd cooked it up.
Oh, no. I'm going to eat it.
You're going to eat it. Right. Are you of your heavily pregnant wife doing the cooking?
I know, it's terrible, isn't it? I should be ashamed of myself.
Yeah, yeah. So, Venetia, when's the baby due?
Any day now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it could be the weekend. So this is the last run in, really. The last bit of peace and quiet.
Well, you know, I don't know if you know this, Tony, and you better inform Venetia, but over the years, there would have been questions into various radio shows that I've worked on about bringing on labour. And
that's
one of the things
that...
Yes, a curry. That's why you're having the curry, right? Okay, right. It's something to do with the chili or something. Now, I don't know if there's any scientific basis for that. I don't know if it's evidence-based, as they say now. But it's definitely an old wives' tale.
I hope nothing happens to me, anyway.
See, Tony, I know that you're actually a nice man. This is your public persona here that you're giving me here. What do you do for a living?
I'm in the legal business myself. Yeah.
Right, okay. And is this your first child?
It is. Yeah.
Right. That is very exciting, isn't it? Because
all
will change.
So people keep saying.
Yes, yes. What sort of things have your friends who have children been telling you, Tony?
Well, they've been telling you to, some people have said run. and other people say get your catch up in your sleep, things
yes.
like that. So
I don't think you can. You can't bank sleep hours. I don't think that's possible. Yeah, as little as I know about sleep, but I know that to be a fact. Right, Tony, you're up against Maura O'Leary in Cork City. How are you doing, Maura?
I'm grand. How are you?
Good. You're out shopping in the world famous English Market.
Well, I was, yeah.
Right.
I ran down town to collect my laptop, which is in the repair shop.
Right.
So I just ran through the English Market on the way.
Aha. Did you buy anything?
I bought wild prawns, mixed salad, and that'll be dinner tonight.
Oh, lovely. What are you going to do with the prawns?
I will just pan fry them quickly.
Yes. With a bit of garlic and chilli or just nothing?
Oh, yes. garlic and chilli, and I've lemon as well too.
A bit of butter, to finish them
and
off.
A bit of butter, exactly.
Oh, lovely, lovely. And then toss them in the salad, or maybe just have them the salad on the side.
Salad on the side with some potatoes or chips. I'll decide what I'll have.
Right, okay, yeah, chips or potatoes, yeah. Have you got an air fryer?
I do. I use that all the time.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in two minds about the air fryer.
Oh, I love it.
Do you? Yeah. How long does it take to do chips in it?
Well, what I do, like, what I'll probably do this evening now is I have those tiny baby potatoes.
Yes.
I usually just parboil them.
Yes.
Chop them in half, put some olive oil on and whatever flavouring, turmeric or whatever I want on it. And just
toss
throw
them in.
And about 10 minutes, 10 right. to 12 minutes. Yeah.
And skin still on?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Now, when you say baby, I know it's difficult to tell, but how big are they now? Are they...
Small.
Small, right, yeah. That's great. The size of a cherry tomato?
No, about two cherry tomatoes.
Two cherry tomatoes. Okay, I must try that then. Okay, so lovely fare on offer in the O'Leary and Moore households this evening. Five questions each, lads. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If it's a draw, we go to a tie-break situation. Let's hope there's no legal complaints at the end of all this, Tony. Right, good luck to you both. Here we go. Tony, first question for you. On this day in 1945, during World War II, Japan officially surrendered to the US. The flag of Japan has which two colours? Red and white or blue and white?
Red and white.
That's the correct answer. For you, Maura, on this day in 1911, Chao Chagas became Prime Minister of Portugal. The flag of Portugal has two colours. Red and white or red and green?
Red and green.
Oh, we know that too well from last night, yeah. Tony, second question for you. It's an audio one. Have a listen to this.
What about it? Why don't you look at yourself and write down what you see? Maybe you're frightened.
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Yeah. On this day in 1940, Harry Northup, American actor, was born in Texas. He appeared in that film starring Anthony Hopkins and Jodie Foster. Can you name it?
The Silence of the Lambs.
Correct answer. So it's all food today, isn't it? And for you, Maura, on this day in 1915, Meinhard Rabb, American actor, was born in Wisconsin. And I'm going to play a clip here, and I want to know the name of the movie.
And remember, never let those ruby slippers off your feet for a moment, or you will be at the mercy of the Wicked Witch of the West.
But how do I start for Emerald City?
It's always best to start at the beginning, and all you do is follow the yellow brick road.
Yeah, Meinhard Rabb starred in that movie alongside Judy Garland. Can you name the movie?
Wizard of Oz.
That's the correct answer. Question number three for you, Tony. On this day in 1991, the US officially recognised the independence of Estonia. Which of these is the capital of Estonia? Tallinn or Minsk?
Tallinn.
Correct answer. Minsk is Belarus. Maura, on this day in 1991, the US also officially recognised the independence of Latvia. Which of these is the capital city of Latvia? Riga or Vilnius?
Riga.
Correct answer, Vilnius, is Lithuania. Right, you're well. You're doing well. Music question for you, Tony. Have a listen. And you wear it well. Madame Onassis has got nothing on you. No, no. Anyway, my coffee's cold and I'm getting told. On this day, 1972, that singer had his first number one single with You Wear It Well, which you just heard. Can you name him?
Rod Stewart.
Correct answer. And for you, Maura, have a listen to this. Oh, there you go. There. That song, Love's All Around, was at number one on this day in 1994. Can you name the group?
Oh, God. Water comes to my head.
Water, yeah. Go on, quick. Go on. It's there. No. No.
No, it's gone.
Yeah, you're going to kick yourself now. Wet. Water. Hard luck on that. Isn't it mad the way the brain works, isn't it?
Yes.
It's mad the way the brain works. Okay, Tony, you're in a good position here. If you get your final question correct, Maura can't catch you, and you are today's winner. So good luck with this. Here we go. On this day in 2012, a decades-long ban on veiled female news presenters was lifted from state television in Egypt. Which of these countries has a larger population than Egypt? Vietnam, Germany or Mexico?
Mexico.
You say Mexico. Right. Germany, 83 million. Vietnam, 97 million. Egypt has 102. And you are correct. Mexico has a population of 128 million. So 5 out of 5 makes you today's winner. Maura, sorry about that. Hard luck. Lovely talking to you. We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show mug.
All right. Thank you, Ray.
Right. And enjoy the prawns and the salad and the little potatoes.
And well done, Tony. Thank yeah. you.
Okay. Thank see you, Maura. Bye. 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 Tony, you're making that trip from Drogheda to Dundalk up to the Fairways Hotel. You'll probably need a break with what's ahead of you. And good luck to you and Venetia with the new arrival.
Thanks very much indeed, Ray.
Okay, lovely really talking to you. See you, Tony. Bye now.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 51551, just to catch up on text that we missed from the first hour. Lots and lots of conditioner and light slip-offs, as that person. I used to use an electric nick comb. It was really effective. And if the kids didn't keep still, you can zap them on the ear. I don't think that's allowed. Will you stop talking about lice? Well, we did. My two daughters had long curly hair when they were younger. I sprayed their hair every day with water mixed with hair conditioner and tea tree oil. They never got lice as that person. Half the country is scratching their head. I worked in Justin de Blanc's or Blank's restaurant in Duke Street, Grosvenor in London in the 70s. And Ian Jury and the Blockheads were regular customers and all of them were a pleasure to deal with, says Martin. And it's a French word, chaise longue, L-O-N-G-U-E, meaning long chair. Phonetic English pronunciation is long, says Angela Hennessy. And that's the name of Baxter Jury's book, Chaise Longue. Yes. Orla Gartland, More Like You on RTÉ Radio 1. That's great, isn't it? Yeah. Angela's Ashes, the musical, is back for a one-off special streaming event for Irish New York audiences next week. And in there, you will see Norma Sheehan. And Norma joins us in studio. How are you doing, Norma?
I'm delighted to be here, Ray.
Yeah, I'm always glad to see you.
Oh, even more so.
No, you have a lovely energy about you.
Sure, I love to get out the house. I'll try to put a dress on and everything for it's wasted on radio.
You were saying about masks and everything coming in, and then you mentioned that you've been tested 6 times in the last, how long?
In the last week, I'd say. Right. I've had 5 to 6 tests. It's just the way it is when you're, we had to do some for rehearsing,
yeah.
But also for, I've been on a few filming jobs,
yeah.
And like even if you're going in for a fitting, you have to be tested 48 hours beforehand. If you're going in to shoot a day, 48 hours beforehand. So if the days don't all synchronise, you basically have things poked up your nose every day. But it's just frontline stuff and that's it. Yeah, and it keeps everyone safe.
And you don't mind. And
well, it makes me giggle.
It
makes me giggle.
It does.
The giggles. Yeah.
So you were involved in the, before we get to Angela's Ashes, the musical, which would bring a smile to a lot of people's faces. And I know we've talked about it before with Pat Moylan, the producer, way back.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
Before we get to that, Holding.
Yes, I was on Graham Norton's TV series down in Cork, Holding.
Yes.
Fantastic. Down with Pauline McGlynn, Conal Hill, Siobhan McSweeney.
Did you get good weather?
Brilliant weather.
Yeah, no, because I think that's important, isn't it, for something like that? Because West Cork is so beautiful, and if you don't
very
get
wet.
The weather.
Oh, it does be very wet down in Drimmel
League.
Drimmel League,
right.
And we were up in Fun Man Way, they called it as well, the other.
Right.
No, it was great. It was great. Brilliant experience.
And you were doing a Disney one during the summer as well?
Yeah, I did a Disney one. I did a bit of the Jane Seymour one. And
right.
I was doing one for Element the other day, The Dry. It's
right.
One about alcoholics. So sure, you know me now. I could be popping my head up and everything.
Yeah, and I hear you constantly doing radio ads as well.
Well, you have to stay busy, don't you?
Yeah.
You do. But Angela's Ashes now is the main this one today.
Yeah, you've toured with it before lockdown.
Toured with it before lockdown, and then of course lockdown happened.
Yes.
And thankfully Minister Martin and the Department of Arts, and they were great to fund us all during the lockdown, and they have supported this with the Olympia, and it's gone out live stream next week.
Next week.
Yeah.
I better give people the dates. So special event on the 9th, and then it's available on demand from there on.
Yeah.
And if you go to Olympia Theatre, their website, you'll find out all about that. Now, I was saying it brings a smile to people's faces because
yes.
There is, you know, a perception
that
of Angela's
misery.
Ashes.
Yes, babies.
Yes, yes.
Yep, yep.
Grey, dark,
yep.
Manky, rain, all that sort of thing. And then musical theatre, which is the
yeah.
other thing. It's sequins and
yeah.
jazz hands and all that. So
well,
when the two worlds collide, what do you get?
Well, for me, my favourite musicals would be like Once or Blood Brothers or Les Mis, which
right.
is The Miserables,
yes.
Or whatever it means. And it's that tragic comedy. So one minute, like, I'd be on stage corpsing because Michael Joseph would be so funny. And the next minute, I'm bawling my eyes out because Jacinta White or Marty Maguire or Owen Cannon has me in bits. So right. I have to remind myself, you're on stage. There's an audience out there. But that was back in the day. It is a tragic comedy. There's highs and lows. There's a love story with Bridget Shine. And it basically is about rising out of the gutter. And I've met Malachy McCourt. He came to some of the Limerick shows 2 years ago. Hilarious.
Yes, we've had him on. Yes, he's a very funny man.
So if you don't get the humour into it, forget it.
Yeah.
And the family really stand by the musical. And they wouldn't if they didn't like it.
If it was shite.
Yeah, so they come to it. They travel the world to see it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Pat Moylan is getting it out there. And I do think this musical will be around a lot long after I die.
Because I'm trying to figure out, was it 3 or 4 years that we spoke to Pat about it?
Yeah.
Initially. So it
that
has
was a test
that
run.
That was a test run.
Then there was
right?
a tour and sure, then there was COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if the audience don't like them, they disappear, don't they?
They disappear.
I remember, I think it had a 2 or 3 day run in the Olympia.
Yeah.
JFK, the musical.
Right, yeah.
So that isn't gone. Yeah.
No, there's a load of those ones. They die a death. This will be around. This is so heartwarming. It is just, you know, it's the tragedy.
And of course, us as a nation, we use humour, comedy, whatever, as a coping mechanism. And I think you do as well. Like,
oh, I do.
How many kids have you got?
I have 3 kids.
Yeah.
They've all had nits.
Right.
As we were talking about earlier. God, I was listening a while ago. Jesus, that's traumatic. Yeah. And actually, in Angel's Ashes, they talk about the fleas in the bed.
Yes.
And, you know, it just was so real. And all of them sharing the lavatory, the one lavatory on the lane. But then by the end of it, it's so uplifting. And
Not to get into a sort of an Angela Ashes off, but there were 11 of us in the house and we'd only one loo. Now, it was in the house, so that wasn't too bad.
So did the boys pee outside, I presume?
We did.
Yeah, that's all right.
It needs must.
I peed everywhere during COVID. There was no toilets over. or I was like a cat marking my territory around Docky and Glenageary.
Which brings us nicely on to your podcast, Heal Your Hole. Sorry.
I know.
But so you were about to do a comedy show. Was that your first stand-up show?
Yeah, sure. You know me. I'll try anything. I think I'm brilliant. And so I started a stand-up show, Heal Your Hole, with Norma Sheehan. We sold out 10 venues. And then a few of the ones, you know, the Dundrum 200-seater was sold out. A couple of more were. And then COVID hit. So I turned it into a podcast. I'm on episode 72 now at this stage. Right. Hole Ding is today's one with Graham Norton, about Graham Norton and the thing. And episode 69, I won't tell you what that was about. You can guess.
Yes.
So some of you know, Dustin the Turkey actually did Turkey's Hole for Christmas with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Mario did Funny Holes.
So hole, the hole is the theme.
Yeah, some weeks I do heal holes and then another week I poked a hole in my own eye.
Right.
So it was about
going to run out of holes?
So far, not, but we're getting there. Yeah.
Have you done black holes?
No, I haven't actually done black holes. I haven't got that dark yet.
And then wormholes, because a wormhole is a tunnel that connects.
Or like a moist hole?
No. A wormhole is another astronomical thing.
I've no idea. Yeah. You've given me 2 weeks of footage there. There you go.
And be the other thing, I was desperately trying to get you content for your podcast. So there's a place up in, what's the name of the place now? It's up there in Monaghan or someplace. Anyway, they made manhole covers.
All right, I thought you were going to say it's
Bailyborough.
At
one stage
covers.
Was the home of manhole covers in Ireland.
Okay.
So if you look down at a manhole cover, it would have Bailyborough written on it.
Okay.
It must have come from an Ireland.
And I haven't done manhole yet.
You haven't done manhole?
I've done pothole, leaky hole, hairy hole, itchy hole. They're all done. But I, you know, people say, are you going to go back on tour and bring it back? I know there's 60% capacity coming very soon. And we're in talks to do Shirley Valentine. I might be doing Shirley Valentine in the Gaiety and a few other places soon.
Brilliant.
Which would be lovely.
Yeah. Hello Wall.
Hello Wall. Yeah.
Isn't that it?
Yeah,
that's Shirley
absolutely.
Valentine.
And then Hello Rock.
Yeah.
Oh, I just love it.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed, that's in
and
the pipeline.
And you will be Shirley.
I'll be Shirley.
Great.
Yeah. Apparently I'm the perfect age for her. She's in her 40s.
She was, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's the love interest who's a lot younger.
Oh, young man, yes. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
But then, yeah. No, it's a beautiful story. So,
right.
Yeah.
So you've loads of things going.
Ah, sure, you know, you have to like, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you have the podcast?
We gave it a rest for the summer, but I think we're bringing it back. It's just chatting. It's not like it's a hobby more than I don't know.
No, but you're interesting, like.
Do you what?
Yeah. Some of my episodes are pure rubbish. But like other ones, then are.
Well, we've 2 minutes left. So Norma has a podcast called Heal Your Hole. She's on episode what?
72.
72, and she's looking for more ideas.
So, oh, yeah.
Whole themed.
Yeah.
So it can be W-H-O-L-E or H-O-L-E.
Anything at all. Holistic.
Whole, oh, yeah. You see.
Holy God was another one. any spin on whole. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Holy trousers. Yeah.
I did one with the Angela's Ashes gang, actually.
Oh, did you?
That was very dirty. They were very, very, very were naughty they? Gang. Yeah. Might do another one.
Now, we've covered that, and I'll just tell people one more time that it's next week, the 9th, that there's the big one, which is it's a sort of a Simu stream, if such a thing exists, with the Olympia and New York, the Irish Repertory Theatre there. And then it's on demand after that, and you can go to Ticketmaster to get tickets for that. A Whole Lot of Love.
Great.
Yeah.
I haven't done that one yet.
A Whole Lot of Love. Yeah. These are going to come in after you're gone. So we'll pass them
that's
on to
right,
you.
That's all right. Will you
forward
them on to me?
That's okay.
Brilliant. You'll have to come on one.
Yeah.
Do you have any holes need healing? Okay, right, maybe not now.
You've completely knocked me off my train of thought there. Yes, when is Holding out?
Oh, sure, I don't know.
Oh, you don't know that?
Kathy Burke was the director. Amazing. Yes. Oh, my God.
Actor Kathy Burke.
Actor, now director.
Was that her first
No, she's job as a director. Things. Yeah, right, I was in awe of her.
And Brenda Fricker was in
Brenda
that?
Brenda Fricker. I didn't meet Brenda. No,
was Siobhan McSweeney in that?
Siobhan McSweeney wasn't around either.
You didn't meet them, but they're in it.
Yeah, I met Polly McLean and Conleth Hill. They were in my stuff. And Yeah.
I see that we've 20 seconds. That sometimes you're in competition with Polly McLean for parts.
Well, to be fair, I was up for her part and she got the part of the shopkeeper in it. But I threatened to throw her off the bridge the other night in Skibbereen so I could be like Pippa in Home and Away and take over her role. But I didn't.
Norma Sheehan, it's always great to see you. Angela's Ashes, the musical, the Olympia Theatre, Ticketmaster, and you will be seeing Norma Sheehan in loads of things in the near future. Thanks, Norma. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.